The assigned lectionary gospel passage for Epiphany, which is actually tomorrow, but calling this Epiphany Sunday, is of course the story of the Magi, coming and found only in Matthew, starting in chapter 2. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all of Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea. For so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. From you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage.' When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road." May God bless the reading and the hearing of this word. Amen. Well, I must confess that I have perpetuated a falsehood in this morning's worship bulletin. Did you notice? If not, then perhaps an identification and explanation of that falsehood is in order. Take a look at the painting on the first page after the cover. It's entitled "Adoration of the Magi." And it was painted to hang in the abbey at the Conception Benedictine Monastery in Conception, Missouri. And the theme is a very popular one. As you can see, three magi standing and kneeling so reverently near the manger in the stable, worshiping the newborn baby Jesus as the adoring parents look on. And then the three present their gifts, as the star of Bethlehem hovers overhead and shines upon the baby. And if that painting was broadened out, there would probably be shepherds and sheep nearby as well. And we have seen this visual scene portrayed on Christmas cards, in countless Christmas pageants, and in the typical nativity scene in our own homes. And we also picture this scene every time we sing the familiar carol, "We Three Kings of Orient Are," which we will be singing in just a few moments. But as you might guess, there is something not quite right with this picture. For when we take a close look at the actual biblical account of this story, which I just read, we discover that the image that most of us carry around in our minds is incorrect. The fact is, our image has been clouded by centuries of church tradition. Nothing new there. And if the Protestant Reformation that began in the early 1500s taught us anything, it was about separating what is actually written in the scriptures from what church tradition has added on. And the story of the Magi has had a lot of add-ons that need to be stripped away. But without going into the details in this particular sermon of the inconsistencies between the Bible and church tradition, I want to simply mention what modern biblical scholars believe were the gospel writer's intentions for this story in the first place. And by the way, importantly, is found only in Matthew. First, it's clear that the author wanted to make the connection that Jesus' birth reflected the fulfillment of ancient Hebrew prophecies for a long-awaited Messiah. And second, coming from the East, which probably was Persia, the Magi would clearly have been considered pagan Gentiles. An important point. The fact that they bowed down to worship the Christ child is meant to reveal that God's love, grace, and even redemption is extended to all people, regardless of race, religion, or any other characteristic. And biblical commentator Richard Donovan makes a very important and timely point in this regard. He writes, "Epiphany challenges us to abandon our tribalism, racially, nationally, denominationally, etc., and to expand our tent, or as you may remember, John Pavlovitz would have stated it as, build a bigger table, to welcome even those whom we would prefer not to love." Because it's a burning issue. Because loving those outside our tribe is difficult. But we learn that Christ makes it possible. And that is the Epiphany message. The story, therefore, turns out to be one of radical inclusion. And Matthew makes it clear that the walls that we build to separate people from each other do not separate them or us from God's love or from experiencing God's presence. And third, Matthew uses this story to compare the Magi's worshipful response to the birth of Jesus to the response of King Herod, who at that time was the king of the Jews. And the irony is that these Gentiles, as outsiders, came to worship Jesus, joyously bringing him gifts, while the Jewish king, as an insider, will try to have him killed. So historically, to this very day, and yes, in our own nation's capital, lashing out has been and is a common response by those in power who fear that their control, dominance, influence, and privilege are threatened. Frightened tyrants often become infuriated. Their insecurity fuels their fury. And seized by fear and anger, they often strike out at their perceived enemies or to those who, at least in their minds, do not pay them proper homage. And this is exactly the pattern followed by King Herod, when later in this biblical story, he has every male child in Bethlehem, 2 years old and younger, massacred. This is the story that Reverend Gordon Edwards reflected upon in his sermon here last Sunday and blamed me for intentionally taking that Sunday off so I didn't have to deal with it. It might be true. But the gospel writer wants us to know that true royalty is not to be found in this earthly king, but rather in and through the life that was taught and lived and modeled by Jesus. And the overall purpose of the story of the Magi then is to reveal that God has made manifest to all humanity through the person of Jesus we call the Christ. And that's why this story is called an epiphany. The Greek word epiphany literally means a manifestation, an appearance, or a revelation. And in the broadest sense of the term, an epiphany is an occasion when something appears either surprisingly or not and is revealed to you. It's often described as an illuminating discovery, especially again when it comes unexpectedly, and when everything just somehow seems to be clear and comes into better focus. We often call these aha moments. And in the religious and interreligious setting, an epiphany is often used to describe the revelation or an experience of the divine in our midst. And the church season of Epiphany, which will last until Ash Wednesday at the beginning of Lent, also recognizes the symbolic light that Jesus brought into the world. And this is a season then to recognize and celebrate that light. Well, now comes the practical and spiritual part of the story and the sermon. As I ask almost every year at this time, have you had any epiphany moments lately? Have there been any times or places when you have felt that God's presence has been revealed or made manifest to you? And of important note, people perceive and experience the sacred presence of God in their own lives in many different ways, and often in different ways from other people. So a spiritual experience, they aren't uniform, and they most certainly aren't meant as a competition. So let's take a look now at the challenge present in this biblical story. In other words, how can we see ourselves as part of this story? And since the spiritual life is a journey, not a destination, what can we learn as we journey with the Magi, following the light that goes before each one of us and before us as a community of faith? Well, poet, mystic, and spiritual author Christine Walters-Paintner wrote a wonderful reflection published on the website patheos.com entitled "Follow the Star: Spiritual Practices in the New Year." And I posted part of it in my Word from the Pastor section in the January newsletter, which just came out, and I want to share it in further detail in this sermon. Walters-Paintner invites us on the Magi's journey, and she makes 6 points, which I will just briefly describe. And I invite you to explore how they might inform and guide your own spiritual journey. 1, follow the star to where it leads. As you cross this threshold into the new year, what star beckons you in the night? As you stand under the black sky of unknowing, what star is shimmering? The star might be a particular practice, which when you commit to following it, may guide you into a holy direction. And 2, embark on the journey, however long or difficult. You know, while Herod seeks outside advice and then sends others, the Magi make the journey for themselves. Where are you tempted to trust others to make the journey for you? Like perhaps in reading books about the spiritual journey, but then never practicing yourself. How might you own your own journey more deeply in the coming year? And 3, open yourself to wonder along the way. The scriptures tell us that the Magi were overjoyed at seeing the star. And when we lose our sense of wonder, our hearts become hardened and cynical. And we forget to believe in magical possibilities. So as you enter into a new cycle of the earth turning, how might you embrace the gift of wonder? What practices open your heart to that wonder? 4, bow down at the holy encounters in messy places. When the Magi enter the messy earthly place where Jesus lay, it says that they bow down and prostrate themselves, an act of humility and honor. So as you encounter the sacred in the most ordinary of places, you might now learn to express this as embodied appreciation and honor. And five, carry your treasures and give them away. The Magi reveal the gifts that they have brought of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But what are the treasures that you carry with you into this new year? How might you offer them even more generously to others in the months to come? And six, go home by another way. I try to practice that every time I go home, take a different route. But after receiving the gift of the dream to avoid Herod, the Magi choose another way home. Well, this has a metaphorical meaning. In truth, after any journey of significance in our own lives, there is no going back the same way as before. A transformation has taken place. We always return with new awareness if we've been paying attention. So what is the usual path that you have traveled which has somehow become suffocating for you? And how does this year call forth new directions in your own life? Is there something that could symbolize, perhaps, the new way home that you could carry with you, maybe as a talisman or a mantra? So then, here's the list of these six spiritual practices of how you might own your own journey more deeply this coming year. One, follow the star to where it leads. Two, embark on the journey however long and difficult. Three, open yourselves to wonder along the way. Four, bow down at the holy encounters in messy places. Five, carry your treasures and give them away freely. And six, go home by another way. Perhaps looking into the spiritual implications gleaned from the story of the Magi will spark your own imaginations and your reflections, and even perhaps new practices in your own journey of faith and in our journey of faith as a congregation. So follow the path of light. Amen.